Vincent Poirier is hurt now, so what does that mean? Plus, a conversation with Nick Angstead of Locked On Mavs previewing the Wednesday night game, and dogs. It's all coming up here on the Wednesday Locked On Celtics. Millie's, let's go. Rainy days back with the vengeance back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play, when the F's done I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Melly. Wednesday, hump day, and I'm here to get you through it. I'm John Corrales of MassLive.com here in Dallas, Texas, getting ready for the Boston Celtics and Dallas Mavericks here Wednesday night. No Luka, no Smart, no Robert Williams, no Vincent Poirier. What a mess. In the second segment, you'll hear a conversation I had with the host of Locked On Mavericks, Nick Angstead. Later on in the third segment, the dogs that I was talking about, it was part of a conversation I had with Rich Kimball of The Zone in Bangor, Maine. I'm going to play that whole thing. That covered a lot of topics, so I'll give you that in the final segment, but I'm going to start with the broken pinky of Vincent Poirier. Fractured pinky, and he is now going to undergo surgery. He is going to be out for approximately 6 weeks. Which means all of the stuff I said in yesterday's podcast, throw it out, because Vincent Poirier is no longer going to be the emergency backup, the third string center for the Celtics. The Celtics don't have a third string center. So first step, I would anticipate Taco Fall being called up. That's going to help, but the Celtics have to be somewhat judicious here with his days because, like I said, he only gets 45 maximum days on the two-way deal. If they're going to use him more than 45 days, they have to convert him to an NBA contract, a guaranteed full NBA contract. And the Celtics have all 15 slots filled, which means somebody would have to get waived if they're going to do that. And that gets a little difficult because is it going to be one of the rookies? I don't know. I don't think so, but I think they got these guys for a reason. And is it going to be Semi Ojeleye? I don't think so, because he's shown himself to be somewhat important. And his shooting is back, and his defense is back, and he's actually playing pretty well. So I don't know that the Celtics are actually going to waive anybody. I suppose if they had to, they would, but they're probably just going to try to get through this. And hopefully Robert Williams can be back in 3 weeks once he's reevaluated. But for now, the Celtics are kind of stuck. Poirier, again, out. And Brad Stevens at practice basically said, kind of sucks because he's going to get a crack at some time with Robert Williams out. And then to make things even more difficult, the Celtics are supposed to travel to Toronto on Christmas. And there is some question about whether Enes Kanter can make that trip. Now, the Boston Herald had a conversation with Enes Kanter where he said he is hopeful but unsure about whether he can make that trip to Toronto. And he said, quote, I'm probably going to know 100% within a week. The Celtics are still working on it. I'm just going to go talk to the front office and see what they do and then go from there. It's pretty serious. We'll see what happens. So that is an added element. Obviously, the international arrest warrant sent out by the country of Turkey for Enes Kanter adds a very serious real-life element to this that should not be taken lightly. Like, you can't have him travel to Canada if he's going to potentially get arrested and sent back to Turkey for some reason. Like, that obviously cannot happen. At the same time, I know Enes Kanter wants to be there, and there should be a way for the United States and Canada to come up with this kind of some sort of resolution here. There's got to be a way for him to travel to Toronto to play a basketball game and then leave and just have that be that. But considering the current political climate, considering that certain aspects of that climate include the U.S. being somewhat friendly with Turkey, I would not take any chances with something kind of crazy happening with Enes Kanter. So if there's any sort of shred of that possibility happening, he obviously cannot go. And that goes beyond basketball. You can't let him go and potentially be arrested and sent to Turkey, where they're very obviously going to, well, I don't want to finish that sentence. It's probably going to be very bad for Enes Kanter if that happens. So bringing it back to basketball, if that is the case and you cannot send Enes Kanter to Toronto, then what? Then now your backup becomes Taco Fall. And you potentially have significant minutes for Taco, which, hey, I mean, that's a hell of a chance to get when you're Taco Fall. But it also puts a lot of pressure on Grant Williams, puts a lot of pressure on Taco, by the way, to perform without fouling. I mean, he's going to be going up against a very savvy, obviously the defending champions, but if he's matched up at all against Marc Gasol, like I would, who knows if that's even avoidable. I'd like to have that be avoided, but if that's the case, then Gasol is going to for sure target Taco and try to get him into foul trouble, and that could be disastrous for the Celtics. So this injury, this pinky injury, makes it very difficult for the Celtics. The Celtics front court is in rough shape, and I just don't know how it's going to get better. There is some talk here online. I saw something about Woj. I didn't see him on the jump, but apparently Woj on the jump said that the Celtics would be interested in Steven Adams. I don't know how that's possible. He makes $25 million a year. I don't know how they're going to match that. If they do, even if they're interested, they can sit there and say, yeah, we're interested in Steven Adams. Okay. I'm interested in him too. I'd be great on the team. How do you do it without giving up Marcus Smart, without giving up a key piece, without giving up Gordon Hayward? I'm not willing to give up Gordon Hayward. Unless the Celtics know for sure, 100%, that they are not going to re-sign Gordon Hayward, if there's any chance that they can continue this, or if there's any chance that they can re-sign him, or whatever, like I don't think you mess this up. I think you roll with this because that's kind of what's working right now. And you take Hayward out to put Adams in. I don't know if you're fixing one problem and creating another. That's my fear. And especially if you give up Marcus Smart. Now, if Marcus Smart's the one involved in the deal, then that's a non-starter to me. If you say we're trading Hayward, there was no way he was coming back. We know he was going to opt out. We know what kind of market is coming up for him, and we didn't want to do it. I don't know that he opts out. I don't know what Gordon Hayward's future is, by the way. He has that player option. There are five bad teams that have cap space this year, this summer. I don't know that he's going to want to go to any of those teams. He might, why opt out and go to one of those bad teams, stay in Boston, opt in, and then play it out and then see what happens the next free agency, or opt out and sign long term in Boston. I just don't know if the climate, the free agent climate this summer is conducive for Hayward to do what Al Horford did. Like, Al Horford jumped ship. He went to Philly for a chance to obviously make a ton more money than I think the Celtics were willing to pay, but a chance that he probably saw as a better chance at a team winning a championship. Now, he may be wrong about that. We'll see. But it's something that that was something that presented itself. I don't think that's an option for Hayward, not this summer. So maybe the following summer, when he's an actual free agent where there's no option. But I digress. I don't know that Hayward's going to be traded. I don't know that that's going to be the option. I don't know that moving Marcus Smart is feasible, is doable, even if for something that I could be convinced, like in a Miles Turner thing, you say, well, I at least pause a tick and say, well, he's a defensive monster that you could put at the center spot, and it doesn't impact the Celtics' defense, but you're just ripping the heart out of this team at that point. And I just, considering the way these guys talk about Marcus Smart, I just don't know that that's something that this team wants to do. I think that could be something that really hurts this team. You're really ripping the heart out of this team. And it's something that I would say that even if the Celtics are considering that, I don't know. There's got to be some caution, some trepidation there. So the big situation, even with these injuries, I think it is what it is. Up next, my conversation with Nick Angstead of Locked On Mavericks. Stick around for more of the Locked On Celtics podcast.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
All right, Nick Angstead joins the Locked On Celtics podcast now at Nick Van Exit on Twitter. I always have to say one of the best Twitter handles on Twitter before we do the introductions here. How you feeling, Nick?
Oh, I'm feeling okay. Feeling actually a lot better than I expected at this point in the Mavericks season, seeing that Luka is going to be out for a couple weeks and people are, you know, Slovenians and people overseas are sending me these articles and clips of Luka's mom, you know, saying things in Slovenian and trying to get the right translation and all this. And that's the state of the Dallas Mavericks right now. But the win against the Bucks was incredible. I'm going back through it right now. And the Mavs are on a real high right now.
Yeah. I mean, you beat the Bucks and break, what was it, an 18 game winning streak?
18 games.
I mean, that's crazy. 18 game winning streak. And you do it without Luka Doncic. So let's start with that. How the hell do you beat the Bucks without Luka Doncic?
It's a great question. 18 game win streak, eventually it has to end. And we were saying on Locked On Mavericks that it's kind of a trap game, right? Without Luka, Bucks at home, you know, they're coasting. They're on a high right now. They're doing that. And they got 48 points from Giannis, 48-14 from Giannis. I mean, he was just treating the Mavericks bigs like just small children. I mean, Maxi Kleber fouled out. Dwight Powell had five fouls at the end of the game. Justin Jackson got thrown around like a rag doll during one play, and Giannis finished through with the and one. I think I counted six and ones from Giannis in the paint in that game.
A little ridiculous.
Incredible. And he had six or maybe even more just wide open dunks in a lane that was completely wide open too. So he was just feasting. But the Mavericks got 26 from Porzingis. They got 26 from Seth Curry. And Porzingis is kind of, you know, starting to look like All-Star Porzingis from when he was with the Knicks. And so that's a super positive, you know, thing with Luka being out. Maybe this gives Porzingis some time to kind of find himself, to get his game back to where it was when he was with the Knicks. And that's kind of how they did it. They're also a pretty deep team. They've got a lot of guys that they can just keep throwing out there. There's not really a weak point in the Mavericks lineup unless, you know, some guys get in foul trouble like they were doing in the game against the Bucks. But yeah, they were also hitting threes. They hit seven in the first quarter. That was massive for them. They tied in the rebound battle, which is kind of amazing with the Bucks. 52-52, and they even almost gave it up. The Mavericks are up by 15 with 3 minutes left in the game, and then the Bucks just came storming back. Giannis was on the bench at that point, and they ended up putting Giannis back in, and he scored one time. This is just going back to Giannis. He scored one time, went coast to coast in 5 seconds after a made basket. So the Mavericks make a basket or a free throw. Giannis gets the ball, 5 seconds, he gets another bucket on the other end. I mean, he's just amazing.
It's kind of ridiculous to think. And still I see people out there saying like, well, if you can't shoot outside the lane, I'm still not going to consider him the best player in the league. Like, come on. So it is possible that the Bucks were looking past the Mavs because they've got the Lakers coming up. So
for sure.
So, all right. But still, they had to, the Mavs had to do it. The 3-point shooting, I got to tell you, coming into this, my biggest fear is the 3-point shooting. Brad Stevens teams have always been good 3-point line defenders. They haven't been lately, and they've been giving up a ton of 3-pointers. I feel like, especially without Marcus Smart, that if they're not careful, the Mavs can get hot from behind the arc, and that could be a big problem tomorrow night or tonight.
Yeah, they have a bunch of guys that can get hot. Tim Hardaway Jr. was really good. He had a really good 2 or 3 week stretch, mostly playing next to Luka, but he's a guy that can get hot. Obviously, Seth Curry, that's what he's known for. They just have a bunch of solid 3-point shooters. Those are the only two guys that can really get, I guess Porzingis too, also can get really, really hot. But like Maxi Kleba has been pretty solid. Dorian Finney-Smith has become more solid than he has been in the past. Justin Jackson can hit off the bench. JJ Barea can come in and hit 2 or 3 threes. Jalen Brunson, is solid from three. DeLon Wright, solid from three. Like, there's just guys over and over and over. The only player really in the Mavericks' consistent lineup besides Boban, and Boban hit a good number of threes last year, but it's Dwight Powell. He's the only one that really doesn't hit threes and doesn't really take them. So the Mavericks really can spread it out. And they just, if the team gets hot, then yeah, it could be a problem for the Celtics.
So let me ask you, without Doncic, and let's assume that the Celtics take this challenge seriously, having just watched what the Bucks did and coming off of 5 days off, without Doncic creating those threes, how are those open threes that the Mavs have been getting, how are those going to come about?
They kind of turn into a different team without Luka. We were comparing them on Locked On Mavs yesterday to the West Coast Avengers. You know how you have the regular Avengers and you have the West Coast ones that are kind of the lesser known. And I don't really know all about them, but my co-host did. And I was making this comparison that they're still capable. They're still fun to watch. But they just do different things, and they're just not as recognizable. They're not as, reliant on maybe one big singular person to lead them. And so they've turned into like a ball movement team. They move the ball a lot. They have a couple guys that can drive and kick. And it's not just Luka kind of bailing them out and doing their own thing. And so everybody kind of has to step up. And we've only seen, two games without Luka. And so this team basically just turns into a really scrappy, try and get a three, but also try and, run a bunch of pick and rolls with their guards, with Brunson and DeLon Wright and maybe JJ Barea. That's kind of how they run their team. So they just turn into, a scrappy team. They're now like the underdog instead of a guy that, having a guy that can just destroy worlds on their team.
And it's funny that underdog, it's not like they've been great for very long. It's like they're all of a sudden this season, I feel like because of Luka, they were always supposed to be the underdog, and then Luka's just made it a different animal. And without Luka, like, it's very easy for them to slip right back into underdog status because they're playing a bunch of guys. Like, Tim Hardaway Jr. is not supposed to be doing very well,
right.
Like, that's
right.
Good.
Yeah. We were completely down on him and saying, oh, such a huge contract. And that was the whole thing, that you look at Tim Hardaway Jr. and all you could see was $20 million, right? You couldn't really see his production, but he's been playing so well recently. The first week he was rough, and then he kind of fell into his role, and he was like a 50, 40, 90 player for a good solid 2 weeks playing there. And, was just looking amazing. There was a joke at one point though. Every single time his dad was in the stands, he played super well. That was a pretty funny correlation. It was like a 5-game trend, but he just turned it into completely. So this is what the Tim Hardaway Jr. experience has been. Somebody DM'd us today, and I'm sure you get these all the time. People saying, oh, what can the Celtics trade? This one was, if the Mavericks could get into the Drew Holiday trade scenario, if they could get into that, do you think that they would hold back because the Pelicans would want Tim Hardaway Jr.? Can you imagine?
Oh my God.
Thinking that before. And I think that's still crazy at this point, but that's kind of where fans have come through. They've seen this Tim Hardaway Jr. for a while. And so, it's just been kind of interesting to see that transition a little bit.
I gotta tell you, I'm kind of taken aback by this. I've completely been thrown off. I have no idea what to say to that.
I know it's us too. I don't even think we responded to it. It's just so weird to think that would be the thing that would hold them back. But
ooh, I don't know, Drew Holiday. But they want Tim Hardaway Jr. I don't know.
I know, so stupid.
Okay, I'm just gonna leave that one alone.
Do it, yeah.
So you were talking about Porzingis kind of slowly coming around to finally becoming himself. No, look, he missed all of last season. So inconsistency at this point in the year is not something that should be surprising when it comes to Porzingis. But if he's starting to come around, and is part of what is helping him come around here, was it happening before Luka went down, or is it because Luka went down, he can kind of get back to being himself as the lead guy?
So the thing with Porzingis is that he was doing really well at certain areas of the game. He was doing pretty well, you know, catching, shooting from three, like decently. He was doing really well around the rim. He was finishing a ton of stuff. Obviously, he was getting a ton of lobs from Luka. He was putting back a ton of baskets. He's averaging 9 rebounds a game, which is the most of his career right now. So he's really been focusing on rebounding, which is good. He's also blocking 2 shots a game, which is awesome. He's one of the only, I think him and Towns are the only players, or him and Miles Turner are the only players that are hitting 2 threes and blocking 2 shots a game, which is kind of amazing. So he's doing those things well, defending the rim, getting boards, and but all the other stuff, the getting his own shot, the posting up, the shooting from the mid-range, most of his other three-point shots besides just straight, you know, wide-open catch-and-shoot threes, he was really struggling at. I mean, he's even shooting 72% from the line, which is not great for him either. And so it's just kind of off from what we've known, you know, the unicorn, Porzingis, you know, this guy that can hit shots right anywhere from what this guy has been. And so that's where he's been really struggling. And so he's just struggling in an area. He's not really struggling, you know, completely overall. He's doing some things really well and contributing a lot to this team. His spacing has been amazing. The way that he can pull out bigs, he had the Pistons just completely confused on who to guard. Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin were, you know, out guarding Porzingis on the 3-point line. The lane was just wide open. So he's been a positive, you know, he's had a positive impact on this team. It's just he's struggling to get his own shot.
Well, you know, that I'm sure that'll come with some amount of time, and you know, there's still they still need to work things out between him and Luka and really get playing together even more to get that chemistry. All right, well, Celtics and Mavs, Celtics back in action after like a week off. I don't know, what are you expecting from this game?
It's interesting. I remember from the first game, it came down to the wire a little bit. It ended up being a clutch loss for the Mavericks, but I think Jason Tatum had a really good game in that one. I'm expecting to see a scrappy Mavericks team, hopefully a rusty Celtics team, to be honest. I'm hoping to see more of DeLon Wright. This was his first full game back from injury against the Heat, and so interested to see that. Interested to see more of Porzingis and how, like we've been talking about, how he gets his own shot, how he sort of plays without Luka being able to spoon feed him shots, how he, you know, turns that, you know, into the game. I think Brunson is going to start. He started against the Bucks. He's probably going to start again. They really like DeLon Wright coming off the bench and with that group. And so Jalen Brunson, I'm interested to see what he's going to do. He's had some solid numbers the last 2 games, and you know, filling in for Luka, and so I'm interested to see that. Kemba, it's kind of the girlfriend that never called you back kind of situation with the Mavericks, where it's like, what could have been, you know? Interested always to see how he plays, and yeah.
You know, there's an outside chance, a possibility, that we could get Boban versus Taco in this game.
No, he's been called up?
He hasn't been called up yet, but Vincent Poirier broke his finger. Robert Williams is out with a hip issue that's going to keep him out for a few weeks.
He has Time Lord duties.
So yeah, right. He's going to he's going to go back and, you know, adjust time to where maybe he can be less, have that hip bother him less or something.
It's fighting the daylight savings lobbyists.
That's right. Oh my God, please. So it's possible at some point here that they could recall Taco, which would, I mean,
that would be an all-time matchup.
Taco all-time. Versus Boban, 7-7 versus 7-5.
Right? I might have to do a full breakdown on my channel, on my YouTube channel, about that. Just that moment. Whatever it turns out to be, just I'd have to do a whole thing on that.
That would be, honestly, that would be one of the greatest moments in basketball history. I mean,
it's not hyperbole to say that.
It's not. Not at all. Not at all. If that happens, the entire world tunes in. All of a sudden, the ratings become Super Bowl ratings. Everybody, hey, holy shit, it's Boban versus Taco. If they high-fived, it would just cause a wormhole right on the center court.
Oh, man. Yeah. I wonder whose hands are bigger.
Oh, Boban, I think. Boban's, he's got like that gigantism thing going on. Like, Taco, it's weird. For being 7 foot seven, it's almost like.
Or being 7 foot seven. So casual.
Whatever he is. Like, it's like normal. He's just like, obviously he has giant hands, but he's got giant everything. He looks like normally proportioned. Like, if you just took a picture of him, that was not like to scale, so you had no concept of his height, you might think like, okay, it's just a guy. Whereas if you took a picture of Boban in any capacity, you'd be like,
yeah, you know,
holy shit, that dude is gigantic. Like, just his hands alone are, you know, I love seeing the pictures of him like hugging like a reporter, like one of the women who are like on the side.
The picture with him and Kristen Chenoweth. You need to. Everybody needs to look that up. She was the actress that was in the Broadway show Wicked.
I've seen that.
She is like maybe 5 foot, maybe. Yeah.
And she like basically comes up past his knee or something.
Yeah, it's incredible. That's the one that blows me away.
I'll tell you what. This trip would be worth it. I'm sure I could expense anything on my account. If that came to pass and I was the one there to document it all, I mean, that just, I'm hoping for it, but they haven't called him up yet. So
we can only hope,
man. That would be a great one. All right, man. Well, thanks for a quick chat here. Once again, Nick Angstadt at Nick Van Exit, Locked On Mavs. Thanks for popping out for a few minutes, my man.
Absolutely.
All right, that's it. Simple, easy breezy.
All right, there you go. Taco Boban, part one. Let's hope.
Oh, God. They should just start them. They should just come out. Both coaches should just make a pact. Be like, you know what? We're starting these guys.
We're playing them for 1 minute. Somebody's going to foul, and we're going to.
Yes.
Whoever gets the tip will call a timeout. And then
yes. Yes. Call a 20-second timeout, sub in our regular starters. And
if only Rick Carlisle liked fun at all.
All right, man. Thanks for hopping on. Appreciate it.
No problem.
When we come back, my conversation with Rich Kimball of The Zone in Bangor, Maine. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram.
Hey, we're back on Downtown here on a Tuesday afternoon. Rich Kimball, Kerry Haskell with you. And it's time for some basketball talk as we get on the telephone line and say hello to John Corrales of MassLive.com. The Locked On Celtics podcast just settled into the presidential suite down there in Dallas. How is the big D, John?
Yeah. Well, from the ride from the airport looked nice. I'm looking forward to an important game for the Celtics here as they try to get back on track. But looking forward to also getting outside and walking around Dallas a little bit. Not snowing, that's for sure.
I like that. It's been an interesting break here. Was this just a weird quirk of the schedule to have this many days off?
Yeah, it's surprising to me too, because you don't usually see a team with 5 days off in the middle of their schedule without some sort of kind of impetus there. But the net effect here is that January is going to be a crush of games because the Celtics have a back-to-back. First of all, they get a back-to-back at the end of this month, and then they get three straight weeks of back-to-back in January, including 2 weeks with three games and four nights. So this break is nice. It's great to get these guys kind of back settled and get their legs underneath them a little bit. But they're going to have a lot of work to do between now and the All-Star break.
We'll talk about the Dallas game in a bit. First, the news on Robert Williams looks like out for, what, about 3 weeks?
At least, it seems like, yeah. The edema in his bone, which is a bit of swelling in the bone marrow, which sounds horrible and painful, but he seems to be doing okay as he waits for that to heal. Don't know exactly what caused that. It might have been like some sort of stress fracture in there that was undetected. Maybe some of the pain earlier this year might have been related to something like that, although there's no official diagnosis. It's possible that this thing could just work itself out, so they'll give it a few weeks and see what happens and then go from there. But yeah, he's going to be out for at least that amount of time.
Very interesting piece on MassLive.com about something that many people might overlook. Players and why players spin the ball on the free throw line. I thought that was great.
Thanks. One day I was just watching the game and I saw somebody spinning the ball at the free throw line. And it's something when I was playing, it's something that I did. It's something a lot of players do. And I don't know why. It just struck me as, why do they do that? Why do we do that? And I had no answer for why I did it. And so I started asking the Celtics and nobody seems to have an answer for exactly why, other than it's become part of a routine that makes it feel comfortable at the line. And really doesn't matter if you're doing jumping jacks to the line, a backflip. If it's something that gets you comfortable and ready to shoot, then I'd love to see somebody do a backflip at the line. That'd be funny. But if it's something that gets you ready to shoot the basketball, then whatever it is, it is. I know that the purists, like Coach Jay Larinaga, just don't know why it happens. A guy like Carson Edwards spins the ball around his back once, too, on top of that. It's just a matter of something that gets them feeling comfortable, but it really serves no purpose. And there's no real correlation to being successful because of the top free throw shooters. There's a couple that spin the ball and there's a couple that don't. And it really just, there's no rhyme or reason to it, but it's something that everybody does. And once I started asking people about it, they're like, wait a minute, why do I do that? I don't know. Just kind of taken aback by it. Kemba Walker especially was like, I'm kind of interested now to see what the answer is. So, but yeah, no answer. It'll be forever the unanswered question in basketball.
But you know, from playing, it's the free throw shooting more than maybe anything else in basketball is such a routine, and it's one that often you establish as a young player, and you never want to vary that.
Yeah, I mean, if you can get to a point, and whatever it is, some people just take Gordon Hayward, two dribbles, line it up and shoot. Different people have different ways of doing it. It's just a matter of whatever works for you. Free throws are unnatural. You play a 48-minute basketball game in the NBA, you're catching, you're spinning, you're jumping, you're shooting. All of your shots that you take are jump shots in practice. And then all of a sudden you get to a free throw line and you're standing there and you dribble and you everybody's watching you. And it's just the one thing that you don't normally do. So I'm surprised more guys don't jump when they take free throws because that would be more natural than anything. But it's a routine that, once you find one that works, you stick to it. You're married to it because I can speak from experience. It takes a long time to find a thing that works, like where you put your foot, how long do you hold the ball, where are you looking. Like, once you find something that works, it's like, all right, got it. Phew. That comfort level is really important.
John Corrales with us here on Downtown. Well, let's talk about the game on Wednesday night. The Mavericks playing very good basketball, third place in the West right now, 18-8 overall. What do the Celtics have to do to be successful?
Well, it's interesting because normally you'd be preparing for Luka Doncic, but he's out with the injury. So the number one thing now, if you're looking at a Porzingis-led Mavericks team, they're going to be shooting a lot. And I think Dallas's success is going to come from behind the three-point line. They've just got a bunch of guys that shoot a ton of threes. They shoot like 40 threes per game, and they can get going. They've got some shooters. Porzingis obviously can hit some. Steph Curry is another guy that can go hit some. They've got guys across that roster that are going to hit the threes. Now, because they don't have Luka Doncic, you're going to have maybe a little bit more contested three. And I think this is where the Celtics are going to have to really play good defense. It's going to put them without Marcus Smart, who didn't make the trip because he's dealing with the eye infection. They need to close out on those three-point shooters, get them off of the three-point line, and keep them from getting to the rim. This is the standard NBA defense, but this is absolutely what the Celtics have to do. If the Celtics get into the bad habit, they've been normally a good three-point defense team, but they've had some bad habits lately, and they've let up some really big three-point shooting nights. If they do that again, then it's going to be a disappointing loss, because you got to take advantage of not having Luka Doncic. You got to take advantage of these fresh legs and go out there and defend and run those guys off the three-point line.
Hey, John, before we let you go, I wanted to talk about a wonderful piece that you had a couple of days ago about the Celtics and their dogs. Now, look, I'm biased in two ways because I love your writing and I love dogs, but that was a really terrific glimpse at the Celtics off court.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you know, I noticed, early in the season that Marcus Smart and Kemba Walker picked up a couple of puppies. They got a couple of Labradoodle puppies from the same breeder. So I talked to them about it, and I said, you know, I'm going to talk to a few other guys here. I didn't get everybody. I know there are a couple other guys with dogs. You can only put so much in the one piece. Maybe I have to do a follow-up to get all the other dogs, too, the coaches. But Jason Tatum has a boxer, and he has an interesting tattoo on his hand in memory of a boxer that he just lost. You have Gordon Hayward, who didn't have dogs growing up, and he always wanted a German Shepherd. Now he's got two. One of them is this trained protection dog from Slovakia, which is an interesting group of dogs that kind of match these guys' personalities a little bit. But to a man, it's just a matter of coming home and seeing a dog wagging its tail while you show up. And it doesn't matter if you shot 2 for 20. It doesn't matter if you missed the game-winning shot. That dog is there, and it's happy to see you, and it's excited, and it does kind of make things better. I have two dogs myself, so I am very partial to the story. I get to show all the guys pictures of my dogs, so it was a fun moment. And I love having these stories that show a human side of these guys, because all too often we forget that these are, in many ways, regular people who have an extraordinary skill. And this glimpse into the dogs that they have in their lives is a way to just kind of say, you know, they have the same, they got to feed their dogs, take them out, pick up their mess like the rest of us.
Yeah, that's what I loved about it. It was great. Well, John, we appreciate it. As always, have fun in Dallas. Enjoy the game tomorrow night. If you get a chance, say hello to our former Maine Black Bear, Rick Carlisle, and we'll check in with you again soon.
You got it, my friend.
Thanks to Rich for having me on every week. Thanks to Nick Angstead for popping on. You can catch Nick's work at Locked On Mavericks. Nick is great. He fills in on the Locked On NBA show, does a lot of stuff for the network. He's really somebody that you should follow at Nick Van Exit. He's one of the best out there. And thank you for listening to this podcast. If you're a new listener, welcome. I hope you've enjoyed this show enough to subscribe. We do the show differently every day and try to give you a Monday through Friday free daily podcast. So subscribe so you get it into your wherever app, something that you use to listen to podcasts, subscribe, it'll be there. Or you can follow the Locked On Celtics Twitter at LO Celtics, or me, Reds_Army_John. I'll tweet these shows out every night. Regular listeners, 5-star rating, good written review, and share the podcast. Please tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.